Hi, welcome to an episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin. Today, we're going to just take a walk down memory lane and kind of assess how I got here and what I've been through and what I've seen. And because I think in this world of the internet, it's this Faustian deal with the devil where we get all the information and none of the context. So I'm going to give you some of my context. I was in Los Angeles for 12 years. And I became a successful comedian. I still am, I guess. But, you know, I was in with the cool kids. But a lot changed in my life when I had a baby.
His eyes are so intense.
Yeah.
They're like really green looking.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it forced me to kind of figure out what matters in my life. And I think I had a profound loneliness that I wasn't willing to accept. And it all started with a trip home to see my brother on his birthday. That love I felt of like the whole room disappearing and just me and my brother, and he just ran over and hugged me, and I felt family for the first time in a while, you know. And I've visited and all that stuff, but it like really touched me in a way. And I was on a sitcom called Sullivan and Son, and Sullivan and Son is probably the biggest eye-opening experience for me about what makes Hollywood tick. Because we were all insanely close, and Steve Byrne was the executive producer with Vince Vaughn and Pete Billingsley, who was in the movie A Christmas Story. He was a little kid. And it was the most diverse show on television. There was the leads were me, a white guy, and then Steve, a Korean, Roy, black, Ahmed, Arab. We had Brian Doyle Murray and Christine Ebersole and Dan Loria. And so as far as like age, race, gender, everything was extremely diverse. You know, we had Leslie Jones on the show when Steve had to convince the network to put her on because she was no one knew who she was. And no one wanted her then because she hadn't popped. She hadn't become part of the narrative. And here is a commercial that we had on television. Now imagine if this was on today.
Hey, I'm Steve.
I'm Owen.
Hey, I'm Ahmed.
Roy.
And we're from Sullivan & Son on TBS. We just want to thank Miller Coors for your support. Just not necessary at all.
That is so racist.
I'm supporting Steve. It's his favorite song.
No, it's not my favorite song.
That's the number one hit in Korea right now.
It's not.
All right, so look, thank you very much for your support. We really appreciate you.
Again.
Why?
Just
why?
Because that's the song that always plays when the Egyptian guy talks.
That's from Aladdin, first of all. That's not what
it plays every time you rub the lamp and you get the...
Okay.
We'd like to thank you for your support and remind you that Sullivan & Son returns June 13th on TBS. Why are you playing gangster rap music while I'm talking to the people?
I'm supporting you, Roy. You're from the streets.
I'm a comedian. I'm not a rapper.
But you love 2 Chainz.
Do I have dreadlocks?
You want to get buried in a Gucci stout.
You battle rapped your way into this role.
Look, let's sing something where we can all agree that we are going to have fun. We're going to show a little gratitude to our sponsors, Miller Coors. Let's do a little of this. Let's do this, Diddy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking
exactly
about?
What you're
that
talking
one?
About.
Okay, here we go.
Coors Light.
No.
The coldest beer in my fridge.
What's the name of the song? Yeah. Blue Moon.
Name of that song is called Coors Light.
No, you're thinking of the commercial with the silver train that comes through where
people
are
dancing. Yeah, there's a train coming out of the party and stuff.
Oh, no, you guys are talking about that. Always gets me fired up.
Let's do that.
All right,
let's do that. Yeah.
People all over the world join hands. Drink your Blue Moon.
No.
Shuck your Blue Moon. People all over the world looking at the same moon.
it's a blue moon.
No, that's Coors Light. Anyways. A for effort. Sullivan Son, TBS, we really thank you. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, guys. We know drama.
Oh.
It's TNT, man.
No, that's very funny.
When that show was canceled, even though it was number one on the network, I'm not one to complain, but I just think that it was on for 3 years and it never got any left-wing love. Yet, it was the most diverse show ever conceived, ever. They were not giving shows to Koreans. Steve wrote that himself, made it himself, pushed it himself. Ahmed Ahmed was a Muslim lead. Roy Wood Jr., now his career is taking off, but at the time, no one knew who he was. And Steve did all this, and no one cared. We never got on NPR, never got on any of those things, because they don't actually want diversity of thought. They want everybody to be the same and just be black or whatever. That's what they want. And when I say they, I mean they. Look at everyone in control of Hollywood. They're all left-wing. To the point, I always considered myself left-wing until a few years ago. I'm staunchly independent. I have right-leaning views. I really don't have very many left-leaning views anymore. I'm nebulous in a lot of things. I don't really care. But Ellen, Oprah, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, I just name it, Conan O'Brien, they're all the same political party. The CEO of Google, CEO of YouTube, CEO of Facebook, CEO of Twitter, CEO of GE, head of NBC, head of Comcast, head of Universal, all leftists, all. And people won't put that together. They won't address that. Ted Turner, all of them, left, left, left. And the left still makes themselves appear like they are the rebels, like they're the Millennium Falcon going against the Death Star. They are the Death Star. The company that still reps me on paper, I guess. They don't really care too much these days, but CAA, we call the building the Death Star. Like, that's openly what it's called, because it's one of the most, it looks like you're in the Vatican, you know? And the right used to censor people's thoughts and feelings and what they said. They call you a sinner when it was very dominated by religion. And now the left does that. So why am I going on this? All right. That opened my eyes to a lot of things that I was ignorant to. Like when I realized that the PC culture is just escalating exponentially, and it's almost like the frogs in the boiling water. If you do it slow enough, they don't realize the water's getting warmer and they'll just let themselves die, versus if you put a frog in boiling water, they jump out. I, for some reason, I don't know why, have the ability of seeing that the water is being turned up. And the way to handle a bully, I was bullied a lot, is you always stand up to the bully, always. Whatever they do, no. You do that to the bully, no, that isn't okay. Because bullies are cowards, right? They're cowards. So what happened? I had a baby. And that moment changed my life. And I remembered my brother, right? And my brother is a healer. He's an intense guy, but he takes people under his wing and he heals. You know, Jason means healer, oddly. and he's a teacher out here and a lumber guy in the summer when he's not teaching. And he teaches kids, and a lot of times he teaches high needs kids. You know, they send him to my brother because my brother has this purity, this intensity about him, where he doesn't judge you for your learning disability or if you have a disability. Like, I had a fractured spirit, you know. I was almost suicidal at some points when I was in Los Angeles. Like, I wanted to literally die because I was living such a false reality. It wasn't who I was. This is where I'm from. This. This is Los Angeles. Okay, I'm all about beauty and whatnot, but like I felt fractured in a way. I needed it to be in winter or just reality, you know? And so my brother's best friend, that he was like, I need you to meet this guy. He's the greatest. Now we called him Cap. His name is Justin. And he's a really special guy. Here is, and in the daylight, hardest worker ever. My brother would have him help him with trees. Here is me and Justin working with some trees.
A pile. Oh, man. What happened?
Got it.
One, two, three, four.
I'm gonna get this mat out first, I think. Probably, right?
You got it?
Yeah, hold on.
I don't think I had the fucking means. Alright, I hope. You might end up pulling really fucking hard.
Bro, we're gonna pull on this like fucking savages.
I just don't know if I have the means.
You don't have the mean?
If I don't have the mean, it starts going back.
Oh, we got you, man.
At four step, pull it tight. Okay. Yeah, rope behind you. Right now, I'm just cutting the scarf.
Right.
You know, when men pull over giant trees together, it's very bonding. And then we'd hang out all night. We'd drink booze, and you know, Justin would go kind of dark because Justin's a Marine. He's a vet. He's 26, permanently discharged for PTSD. Right? He was a sniper, and he was part of the crew that went rogue in Afghanistan. They had a high body count, you know, and then one of his best friends, the team leader, was blown up by the Taliban right in front of him. And they watched him bleed out and die. And something snapped. And so they just started killing people, you know.
This higher echelon individuals, they cordon off the area. Here they go, protecting this massive, let's say the fucking smoke pit right here. They're protecting. And outside of the smoke pit, there's a lot. Not only just rebel fighters, but a lot of armor, a lot of ordnance, and ordnance meaning rockets, 7.62 rounds, fucking RPGs, armed to the teeth, you name it. And there's only a select few of these higher echelon guys, and I think maybe less than a dozen of them, I think, to guard this whole U.S. embassy filled with these fucking motherfuckers. Send it up to higher again. Hey, we need QRF, quick reaction force. We need help. I'm an American. This is an American hotline. Please fucking, I need aid. I need help. Is anyone coming? We're fucked. If you don't come, we're fucked. Yet again. No answer.
Whoa.
Nothing.
It's so scary.
So now you got a dozen of these highly trained specialized fighters with half a dozen unarmed, untrained, unwilling, sad, pompous, gutless, wretched, spineless, bitch-made fucking political fucks that we have to now protect. Because you're such a quiff bag, I now have to probably give my life to defend you because you're such a quiff bag. Because to the United States of America, the more quiff you are, it seems, the more you rise. Mm. So here we are.
Because you're full of air.
And you're just full of air, and you just rise, and you're a fucking quiff bag. You're just a faggot. Faggot. That's besides the point. But anyway, they must be important.
and they got discharged, you know. And the thing about Saranac Lake, where I moved, it's a town of healing. It's where people with tuberculosis used to go. There's a whole story about it. Trudeau, that's where the Trudeau Institute is here, you know. It's this little town, 3,000 people in the middle of Adirondack Park, and Mark Twain used to live here. Einstein used to live here, you know. We lived down the street from a CEO of Citibank and a dude who, a stonemason who was missing a finger. You know what I mean? Like, that's the town. Because the air was so clean and dry in the winter that it would cure tuberculosis. And people who thought they had a death sentence would come here because they had nothing left. They're like, well, I'll just go someplace beautiful and die. Lo and behold, they didn't die. Right? So even the architecture in Saranac Lake, they're called cure cottages, where these beautiful, big, open porches. And so many rich people were sent up here that there's this element of class in such a more rural, you know, redneck type town. There's an element of this sophistication because these people would come up here to die and they wouldn't die. And so they'd feed into the culture. And so Justin was sent here to go to rehab because he got addicted to heroin in Afghanistan. It started with painkillers because his finger's all messed up and his back's all messed up. And he was a Division I athlete playing baseball. And his father died. So he kind of lost his mind and he went to Afghanistan. And they asked him if he wanted to be an officer. He said no. And Justin's really good at killing people. But he's got the heart of gold. Like he's like a child. He's like the purest hearted guy ever, you know? And so back in reality, he had a hard time readjusting between him as a warrior, a guy. He's like drunkenly been like, I've killed a lot of people, man. And so he got obsessed with comedy. He loves comedy, right? And so I took him out to shows. You know, we started doing shows. So in LA, I would do shows and they'd look like this, you know. And then I'd come here and the same place where my brother had his birthday party, I would do shows and they'd look like this.
Yo, he was all winning the show. It was fucking so good. But my favorite way to introduce this guy is, this is my brother. Owen Benjamin Smith.
And I was happier here. Way happier. My wife was happier. You know, my brother heals. The town heals. Family heals. Four seasons heal. And I was broken, man. Justin was broken. Cap was broken. You know, Guck, broken. All the Island of Misfit Toys came out here. And we had each other, you know? And I have pride in this town. Here's a song I wrote for the town.
Everyone deserves a ballad. I think you guys deserve one as well. You guys want to hear your song?
Yeah!
Be gentle on me, though. This isn't like stage test. I really wrote it today at the Blue Moon Cafe. We moved to a town called Saranac Lake. It's on Lake Flower. There's no Saranac Lake. In LA, the news is murder and fear, but not here. Front pages about a garbage eating bear. There's a village called Tupper Lake. It's on Rocket Pond. It's not on Lake Tupper. Can someone explain why Middle Saranac is higher than Upper? It's so confusing to me. Everyone here is named Dupree. If you don't vote for Rabideau, he'll still build you a house. But then Pat, the code enforcer, will kick you out because your house has a little tiny mouse. Saranac Lake has the coldest beers. Nobody tries because it'll freeze your tears. The weather is cold, Jason fucking Bourne. My brother will drop a tree for you, and it won't hurt any of your flowers. But if you give him coffee, he'll talk about your flowers for 20 straight fucking hours. I don't remember ever going to the watering hole. But according to people, I've been many times to the watering hole. Saranac Lake is the only city in the country to say hey. Hey Walmart, fuck you. Nobody cries cause you have frozen tears. The weather is cold but the people are warm. And even little kids, they ski like Jason fucking Bourne.
Let's hear that damn song. And so what happened was, Justin... Like, he was funnier than me in a lot of ways. Like, here is us talking about Eminem.
Oh, man.
It doesn't have to make sense. Like,
there I go. Lunchroom.
Like,
mom and dad.
One thing.
Salami sandwich.
Peaceful.
Greek yogurt. Mandarin. And maybe a little avocado and some walnuts?
I use some of those ideas now on stage. Like, if your mom packed you yogurt, but she forgot the spoon, do you eat the avocado? You know, that's all him. And I have that on tape. You know how many experiences I've had like that in life where someone tells me something, I'm like, that's genius. Because their damage complements mine. And so I'm out here now, and me and my brother I'm still doing comedy. You can do comedy anywhere. You don't need anyone to tell you you can or can't do comedy. Like, here is a show me and my brother did.
We love him. We love him. He's the man. Dear Prost.
Yeah.
Prost. Prost.
He's having fun. No, hold on. Hold on, damn it. Hold on. As a wise woman once said, hold on for one more day.
Hold on. Wilson Phillips. Okay. That's a big band in Germany, actually. We love
it. It's Wilson Phillips. And that night, a guy held a knife to our throat and wanted to kill us because he was just hammered. And our other friend had done something stupid. And so the next night we brought Cap. And no one did shit because Cap had those eyes that he would see right through you. And you would know that he knew 1,000 ways to kill you. He already saw pink mist, you know? Killer. But a beautiful man. And then Cap goes and dies. He dies of a heroin overdose. For Christmas, I got him a gym membership because guys like that need a mission. You know, I think people in general need a mission, but especially elite athletes, warriors, service men and women. These people need a mission. You got to give them a mission, you know? And when he would drink, he'd get dark. And so I got him a gym membership. And we were working out and doing good. And then he started slipping. And I was on the road a lot. And we couldn't really hang out with him as much as we were. And he fucking died, you know? And the guilt of that is mind-blowing. When you have someone so special and so good that, like, you being with them helps. And they just need love. And they're in this world where people turn their backs on them and they call them monsters and they just say, fuck you, America, and stuff like that. And these people have lost everything, everything, their mind, their health, their ability to sleep. They can't enjoy the 4th of July because fireworks are going off. And this whole time you have all these leftist do-gooders acting like they're noble. When you have my brother out there being noble and not in a condescending way, these are people he loves and looks up to and respects and talks about and can't wait to see. And I felt that way with my brother, like that he was like that with me. And then you got Guck. Guck was Cap's roommate.
Barbacks.
In the gas station.
Popcorn, Parvex.
5 hour energy, 5 hours and 35 minute energy, 6 hour energy, maximum stamina.
Bam!
Power pack.
Guck was an elite athlete in high school. He was a great hockey player. You know, his uncle fought. He goes over and fights. He gets PTSD, has to come to Saranac Lake to heal, rooms up with Cap, right? These people face things that we can't imagine, you know? And as we're working with my brother goes and buys 40 acres of land for kind of no reason. It's beautiful. It's the most beautiful section of land you can see, but it's in the national park, so you can't subdivide it. There's no way to actually profit on it. He just has this vision of like a place where we can have little cabins. And so I'm chatting with Guck because we're just working. That's what we do. When you got to heal, you just work. You just complete tasks, you know? And here's a little bit of Guck.
Hit me.
Okay, so this morning my doctor's like, whatever you have left of your script, it's a 2 week script of methadone. You got to figure out a way to what taper off of it. And I was just, you know, I wanted to flip out on her, but I held my composure and was like, that's not going to get me anywhere. But so I was researching everything, and like they say that if you're taking methadone, like it doesn't attach to all of your opiate receptors.
Yeah,
like heroin or, you know, other opiates, Dilaudid, whatever the fuck you're using, fentanyl attaches to. So like if you're on it, it's not hurting you, you can still like recover and heal, like your brain chemistry.
Well, it's also risk reward. It's like it's way better than heroin. And you're a vet.
Yeah.
You're a vet who like had a problem and now this is helping and now they want to take it away from you.
Yeah, all because of the way it's written. When the first appointment I saw with her, the old doctor was gonna taper me down 5 milligrams a month. Like slowly. So like I'm not even on a high dose, dude. Like some people, like Justin Roepke was on like 130 at one time milligrams a day. I take 30 milligrams a day, you know? And it's not a high dose, but it just helps me with cravings. And I haven't had any thoughts of using heroin since I've been on it, like at all.
Yeah.
So I really think it helps. And so what if I got to take that, you know, for the next year or two?
What's their justification?
Because it's covering her ass the way it's written. Because it's written for pain, which is true, because I had an x-ray on my back and my whole L5 lumbar was fractured. And it just healed, but it didn't heal properly. So, like, of course, and I have, like, minor scoliosis, and, you know, I never had that before. So that's probably from, you know, carrying around, like, fucking heavy gear or whatever, you know. I don't know, roofing, all sorts of factors.
Yeah.
But my back's, pretty fucked up for a kid my age, you know.
Yeah.
So the original doctor wrote it for pain, but she saw that I had an opiate problem, you know, in the past. And so now she's like, I'm not lying, and I can't even write it for opiate addiction. I can only write it for pain. And I said, exactly, because it is for fucking pain, lady, you know?
I know. Like, people don't understand, like, the pain of opiate addiction.
No, I know.
And how it'll kill you.
And then, like, the first appointment, she was super sympathetic for me. And she's like, yeah, I would never allow you to just expect you to taper off 5 milligrams at a time. That's a huge dose, because 5 milligrams of methadone, okay, a fucking 10 milligrams of methadone is equivalent to like Oxy 30, you know?
Right.
But in different factors.
Like totally.
It's just powerful. It's strong. So dropping down 5 milligrams is a lot, you know? That's like 15 milligrams of...
Did you tell her that you're going to work on your obituary?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I said, well, I might as well get my obituary started now, lady, because that's insane. She said, oh, I'll get you into a detox program and stuff and get you detoxed properly off of it. And I said, there's no detox center that will detox anyone for methadone. Trust me, I know this. Like, well, I've had plenty of friends go through this. Like, you're supposed to properly taper down over, like, a year period of time. Like,
right.
You know, you slowly taper down.
Don't you hate it when people that don't understand heroin addiction try to act like they understand heroin addiction?
Yeah, I fucking hate it.
That's one thing that stuck in my mind about Justin and the stuff he wrote. He said, I remember him saying that heroin is not a moral issue. And that, like, really resonated with me, where it's not. Like, people make it seem like it's just something that you take if you're like a street kid.
Yeah.
But no. Really it's a misfiring of synapses with pain and PTSD, right. And all that shit.
Yeah, well, my doctor even told me, the same fucking lady told me, she said my husband was prescribed it after one of his surgeries, and she said that he goes, this is like the best, they should use this as antidepressants. And even she said it would be the best antidepressant ever out there. Like, because it releases dopamine. It's like an unreal amount. So it makes you fucking, not only like, it doesn't help with pain, it just makes you super fucking happy.
Yeah, know? And tell me about that. What happened with your buddy when you had that happen when you were in the Air Force?
What's that? His death and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just, so like, I was working in the armory. It was March 2nd, 2011. And there was a team, you know, deploying to Afghanistan. But instead of flying out of the airbase, they had to go to the Frankfurt International Airport.
Yeah.
And some guy from Kosovo walked on the bus. He wasn't from Kosovo. I forget where the fuck he was from, but some place. You can look it up.
No, but you were telling me you were going to drive the car, and then your buddy wanted to.
Yeah. No, he, like, came back from leave or whatever, and I was working in the armory, and, like, you know, usually you, like, store all their weapons, gear, and shit, and then, you know, load up their buses or whatever, and you or somebody will drive them to the fucking, you know, to the airport or whatever, transport them there. So this kid, Zach, cut it back, drove him to the fucking airport in Frankfurt, and he was fucking shot and killed right there at the, you know, some guy walked up on the bus and started shooting off rounds and killed him, the driver, Zach. He's a 19-year-old kid, and injured, you know, a couple other guys on the bus, and so whatever, I was just fucking like, you know, what the fuck, they're taking a while working back there, and I flew out of the same airport 5 days later, three days later, the fifth or whatever, like, I just took leave because it was fucking, you know, a lot, and like, there's nothing, like, it wasn't on the news, the media, nothing, like, it was just kind of swept under the rug. Like, you can look it up, you know, online, and the only article or anything you'll see is in, like, it's called the Stars and Stripes, you know? Like, that's fucking insane.
Yeah, you were saying that you were in Germany, and you were watching the news, and it was just, like, Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah, just bullshit. Like,
and your buddy, and didn't you, like, you guys were, like, really tight, right?
Yeah, like, he played hockey on the base team and shit. Yeah,
Yeah, and don't you think that that's a major issue with vets, that, like, they don't get the coverage and the respect and from, you know, our media that they deserve, and it, like, keeps people in a constant state of anger?
Yeah, and fear. They just put whatever can, you know, drive fear and whatever, you know, like, there's just so much. I don't understand the media, you know, I don't. I think it's a crock of shit, really, you know?
Yeah, it's like,
don't... It might not even been the media. It could have been... It's probably, obviously, you know, the government didn't want it on the media, or didn't want, you know, like, you know...
Yeah, it's almost like the media is a middleman sometimes. Like, who knows what deals they have with the government?
Oh, that's what I mean. Like, there'd be Canadians taking pictures of them unloading, like, dead bodies, you know, like, of soldiers.
Yeah.
Fucking, you'd have to detain them and take their camera and delete all the pictures they took.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Just so that we can talk for 9 months about whether or not Donald Trump said something offensive.
Right? That was sweet. Hold on. I'm trying to spit it in the air and catch it.
Ah, brother just got hit.
So what I add to the squad is comedy, you know, and just being a goof. And we all have our little piece of our squad. And so I got my brother into comedy because he has me pulling down trees and hanging out with people I'd never understand. And so I got him into comedy. So here's some footage of my brother planning his routine for that night.
So I'm not here to make you laugh. I don't want you to laugh. I'm here to just talk about the warmth of the room and being together. And I want to point out how laughing is dangerous. There are dangers in it. There are things can happen that might be irreversible, like your balls fall off. I don't want to be responsible for that. I don't want that to happen to you. No one's quite sure if they come back or if they explode or they roll down like the meatball on spaghetti song if you find them under a bush. So don't laugh at me. No, I'm not going to do that. I want, because I have U.S. Marshals here, it's going to be, I have ball collectors. They have like brooms and a DNA scanner, and we'll collect all the balls. At the end of the day, we're going to sweep them up. We're going to put them in we got a thing from a dentist's office, an autoclave. We're going to run them through a DNA thing. We're going to match everybody back up with their balls. We have a surgeon. She's great. She's from Germany. She'll put them right back on, even better than before. They'll get a washing. So you should laugh as hard as you can, men who want new and improved balls. You'll get better balls.
You know that could be there and you don't know they're there? I have put ball collectors here. Throughout the audience, you may be next to one you won't know. So should you laugh so hard, men, that your balls just go, like, they're just rolling down to this carpet here? Should you lose your balls? I have ball collectors here. They have, like, the little brooms in the dollar store. We have a ball washing kit. Owen ordered this, like, high-tech DNA synergizer, so we'll get your balls, we'll clean them, and we'll match them to you. You'll get them back. We have a surgeon. If you want them back, not a problem. So, don't hold back the ball laughing laugh. If it's in there, we got you covered. Because tonight, we got a guy who you may have seen on Sullivan and Son. You may have seen him on The House Bunny, Jimmy Fallon, Blue Moon Cafe. He gets two Rubens. Please put your hands together for my brother, Owen Benjamin! Woo! I'm gonna talk to my brother Jason, huh? I'm here. What a ball collector.
And we now live in a town where people will leave us berries on the porch saying that they're happy we're here. And I never felt that in LA. And I've been getting shit lately from people who call me a hater or something because I mock celebrities. One of the first songs I ever did on stage was in 2001. It was just called I Wanna Kill Ben Affleck. I did a song in 2005 about Jimmy Fallon getting AIDS. Like, I haven't changed. I am funny. I'm loving. I'm a family person. I like to poke at power. And when power used to be the Leave It to Beaver archetype, and if anyone wasn't that, they were bad or wrong, I poked at them. And now I poke at the people who deserve poking. And I'll never back down, and I'll never stop. And I know what is good and what is bad. And I've been on both sides of it. I've been in the belly of the beast. I've been in paradise, you know? And the only thing that gets me through the day is family and completing missions and being able to make fun of the world. Because when I was a little boy and I didn't quite fit in with the world, I played the piano and I wrote jokes. So I will be damned if anybody takes that from me. And when I watch Trevor Noah, here's something to think about, ladies and gentlemen. Why are people getting more left-wing when they get richer. You ever think about that? Why is it? We were always told that the elite 1%, the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, that they're all these right-wing, gun-toting, white monsters up there at the top, right? Why is it that the artist becomes more left-wing the more money they make? Well, I have an answer for you. It's because they're the bad guys. Authoritarian control is now left. It has been right. It could be right again in the future, but it's not currently. And I have remained unbelievably consistent compared to most people. I've changed my tune on certain things, but here's a clip of before Trump was elected, like a week before. Here's my opinion. Now, that's exactly how I felt. That's almost exactly how I feel now. I'm more in favor of Trump now because I've seen how the left reacted. But at no point was I ever going to mock Trump supporters. I would mock him. I think he's fairly buffoonish. But now I see why that happened. I see why they needed the wrecking ball. Because once Trump won, the left, the mask came down. And I don't know if you've ever been talking to people on Twitter, and at first it's civil, and I'm like happy. You know, they're almost nudging my opinion one way or the other, you know, about whether it's trans bullshit or something else. And I'm like, okay, the fact that you're funny or like, or fairly kind, I'll listen and I'll think. And then out of nowhere, it's like, I hope you fucking die. You know, did you suck your dad's dick? Like, that's what happens. Go on Twitter. Like, you'll see it all the time. A mask comes down and the monster's revealed. And you're like, oh my God, you guys are monsters. That happened to me with the left. Like, when Trump lost and you saw just the fear. Fear is a sign of weakness. Because they thought, we're out of control. We don't have control. Oh my God, there's a normal person. There's a normal person without our game plan in there. Is he ideal? Of course not. He like literally like says really stupid shit. And I don't like that as a president. But like, be way more scared of people with a game plan. People that the more power they get, the more they want to slam the door shut. Sarah Silverman, right? One of the most free speech activist, open, libertarian type people on the planet. And as soon as she got power, just slams the door shut. Don't say that. Don't say that. You're bad. You're Hitler. You're Hitler. You're Hitler. That's authoritarian. And I am not affected by people telling me that I'm alt-right, right-wing, monster, like mean. That's how they trick you. Do you think I don't know humans, people's soul? Like what kindness, altruism? The shit I've endured and been through and watched other people endure and be through and what we face every day to stay alive and to stay happy and to not fucking have more friends die or to be honest with ourselves so that we feel emotion when good things happen. So that when I'm paddling around with my son and wife and her grandparents and her parents with a big pink flamingo and in the lake, I can feel the moment. You can only feel the moment if you're honest. That's the price of dishonesty. It's not that you're going to be in trouble. Oh, you're in trouble. There is no one to punish us. We're adults. What it is you no longer can feel life. And that is when you want to fucking end it all. And some people end it all with condemnation, right? They try to end it all with just this benign, just the banality of evil, just this shitty, just half-truth of a life. And we all die. I watched Justin, the specimen of a man, like just chiseled, bright eyes, brilliant, seen and done everything in the world, lying in a casket with a bloated face because this new type of heroin just fucking stopped his heart permanently. I've seen him drooling, like looking for heroin, and I've seen him clean. I've seen him, you know, run up a mountain in the dead of winter in a fucking diaper and shoeless because he wanted to feel the pain of war again. You know, I know the feeling of being like, you got to call so-and-so because if I'm out of town, he may relapse. I know that, like, I was doing jokes about healthcare in 1999 about how I wanted to go to prison because they had a meal plan and health insurance. These things are just used to force people to give the government more power. These are never going to change. Tribalism, never going to change. Whether you call it racism, transphobia, homophobia, it's all tribalism. You don't think LGBTQAI activists are a little fucking redneck phobic? That they don't realize that a lot of the country folk that they think are like burning crosses and shit are the kindest people on the planet? They would welcome them in for Sunday dinner any day of the week and just kind of not think it's cool to like put your dick in a dude's ass, but that's it. They'll literally die for you. Everyone has a phobia. All right, I gotta wrap this up. So I'm preaching now. I don't like it when I get too intense. Let's see, is that all I want to show you guys? Man, what do we got here? Yeah. All right, well, if you want to support the Patreon, because God knows the big leftist corporations don't support people like me, and don't think for a second that those are right wing, these big companies, because the biggest game in town is taxes. Half your money goes to taxes. Even if you're in a low tax bracket, you still have sales tax, and then of course you have state tax, and then you also have the tax your landlord pays, which gets put into your rent. Tax, tax, tax. So when you got a guy like Jay-Z, who's left wing, right? The guy sold women and crack. He climbed his way out of the ghetto, much respect, climbed his way out of the ghetto like Bane from a hole. Do you think at that point he becomes the one who becomes altruistic, who only cares about trans bathrooms? No. These people want the big money. Tax. They want the government to funnel them tax money. And if you think it's not real, just what motivates these people? What motivates Zuckerberg? You think he's a good dude? No, he's not a good dude. Read Hatching Twitter. Read about the people who started Twitter. They're monsters. They're all leftists. Karl Marx was a piece of shit. Stalin was the worst murderer in human history. Lenin, piece of shit. Trotsky, piece of shit. Pol Pot, murderer, piece of shit. Castro, piece of fucking dog shit. Mao Zedong, 60 million of his own people he let fucking starve. What do you think these people are? All right, so I'm doing Texas, 2 weeks in Texas. I'm also doing the UK. And don't worry, if you're thinking like, oh, I don't know if I want to see Owen these days. I'm a crusher, right? I don't do this shit on stage. I don't fucking do rants about leftism. I'll give you comedy. And it'll be real, and it'll be true, and it'll be as authentic as I can possibly be. And it'll mostly be about men and women, and dogs, and piano, and driving, and the shit that we all relate to on a daily basis. But this is what I'm fascinated by, because I kind of figured out men and women, to be honest with you. You know, I have whole hour specials on it. I got it. That used to plague me like this plagues me. Plagued me. I didn't understand what women wanted. I figured it out. Boom. Okay. I'll still give you the info. I'll still make you laugh. But like right now, I want to know how people are blind to reality, how people can literally not see what's going on, that everyone is seeing it just like this. They're... All right, you get it. All right, so subscribe to the podcast, share, whatever you want. I love you guys. Peace.
Greek yogurt. Mandarin. And maybe a little avocado and some walnuts.
I don't care if that's right.
Total just white, great lunch. Not here in this lunchroom. Needs to be harder.
I'm just gonna say,
devil dog in other people's pockets. I want your devil dog and your number two pencil.
And then I'll just make
lunch.